The Gospels, a commentary. Professor Anthony Frendor and Professor Peter Barsalo discuss excerpts from the Gospels. Readings by Patricia Camilleri. A reading from Luke chapter 19, verses 1 to 10. He entered Jericho and was going through the town when a man whose name was Zacchaeus made his appearance. He was one of the senior tax collectors and a wealthy man. He was anxious to see what kind of man Jesus was, but he was too short and could not see him for the crowd. So he ran ahead and climbed a sycamore tree to catch a glimpse of Jesus, who was to pass that way. When Jesus reached the spot, he looked up and spoke to him. "Zacchaeus, come down. Hurry, because I must stay at your house today." And he hurried down and welcomed him joyfully. They all complained when they saw what was happening. "He has gone to stay at a sinner's house," they said. But Zacchaeus stood his ground and said to the Lord, "Look, sir, I am going to give half my property to the poor, and if I have cheated anybody, I will pay him back four times the amount." And Jesus said to him, "Today salvation has come to this house, because this man too is a son of Abraham, for the Son of Man has come to seek out and save what was lost."
Right, so today, Peter, we've got a text which is recounted only in the Gospel of Luke, St. Luke, and it's very interesting that the original historical encounter between Jesus and Zacchaeus has obviously been drafted according to Luke's perspective. So the historical event is reflected upon, so to say, and written later on. I would just like, by way of introducing our conversation, to point out a couple of notes of historical interest. First of all, the name Zacchaeus is a Greek form of an original Hebrew name, Zakkai, which is found in the Old Testament, and which happens to mean pure or righteous. Now, obviously, at the start of the story, Zacchaeus is anything but righteous. I mean, if we can have a play on names. What is interesting historically also is that St. Luke speaks of chief tax collector. This nomenclature isn't found elsewhere in the literature of the period, neither in the New Testament nor outside it. So possibly Luke wants to, capitalize on the historical truth that Zacchaeus was a tax collector, and he says he's a chief tax collector. He's as we'll say in Maltese, we had mil primi. He's a real tax collector. He's one of the first that there was. As we know, the tax collectors in Israel under Roman rule collected taxes and gave them to the Roman Empire and put things also in their own pocket. That's why tax collectors were viewed as public sinners. Another interesting thing is that Luke molds the story according to his theological perspective. Everything in the Gospel of Luke happens, in a sense, today. It is very important where Jesus says here to Zacchaeus, "Zacchaeus, hurry and come down, for I must stay at your house today." And then later on, further down, it says, "Today salvation has come to this house." This is an emphasis on the part of Luke, running through his gospel. For example, the birth of Jesus, the angels say to the shepherds, "Today a Savior has been born unto you." In the story of Zacchaeus, "Today salvation has come to this house." On the cross, Jesus promises the thief, "Today you will be with me in paradise." Perhaps with these few points, we could start our conversation and then go back to some more historical information in due course. I don't know what your opinion of this text is.
Again, it is a very terse text. A lot of information carried within a little space of text. The details are given. That, I think, establishes a kind of authenticity. It's Jericho. The fact that Zacchaeus is very short, vertically challenged, as we would say now, very challenged, I imagine, because he was very, very short, remarkably short, that he's wanting to have this view of Jesus. Of course, Jesus' fame precedes him as a miracle worker, as a healer. And he seems to be already predisposed towards him. And the detail, again, of the sycamore tree, that's interesting because it shows a certain amount of authentication, as if there's somebody who's been witnessing it. It doesn't say he climbed a tree, mm-hmm. but a specific type of sycamore tree. And then you've got Zacchaeus sort of looking on in a kind of anticipation and excitement, and Christ's speaking voice, telling him, calling him first by name, knew his name already, mm-hmm. which of course would have surprised Zacchaeus immediately. How does he know? But that's not even said, it's understood. And then Christ almost sort of gentle command, hurry down because I'm coming to your house. I want to eat with you, won't you? And but it seems to me that there is a sudden conclusion where something seems to have been left out. As if the conclusion comes in, but a paragraph or so has been left out, in the sense that we don't quite know what was said during the dinner,
exactly.
and how Zacchaeus comes to the conclusion, his own redemption, by immediately offering to pay four times as much for the money he had taken. Presumably he used to overcharge, give the Romans what was their due, and then put the rest in his pocket. So the beginning seems to promise a longer story. The narrative, this is going to be a longer story, and you have the probably one or two of the Jews with Zacchaeus who say, how come you're having dinner with this sinner, this hated man, because they were hated in those days. And that seems to be lost, and instead you have Christ sort of listening to Zacchaeus saying that he's going to make amends, and then his, again, enigmatic statement that the Son of Man, calling himself again, as we've been saying,
exactly.
Son of Man, has come to save what was lost, and even Zacchaeus is the son of Abraham.
Exactly.
And I think that that son, being the son of Abraham, would have been significant, wouldn't it?
Very much so. Being a son of Abraham meant everything to the Jews. In fact, in one of the stories of the encounters between Jesus and the his opponents in the Gospel of John, they claimed that they were the sons of Abraham. So who is this man, you know, trying to propose himself, making certain claims? You are not even 50 years old yet, and you say you've seen Abraham. You know, so that was crucial. In other words, they belonged to the chosen people on all levels, physical and spiritual. I like your point about the missing piece of the dialogue. This is very interesting because, as you rightly pointed out, the text is very terse. And that's what perhaps makes it so pregnant with meaning, full of meaning. I must say, in antiquity, I think even Greek historians like Thucydides and so on, they report on you know, historical writing and what happens with dialogue. And usually, the dialogue is inserted by the author according to what he thought would have been said, because nobody was present at the meeting. And precisely, I think, in our text, it is precisely this fact that the private dialogue between Jesus and Zacchaeus over dinner is not reported, proves the authenticity of the meeting. In other words, if I may make a comparison, nobody heard what Pope John Paul II had said to his the Turkish chap who had tried to murder him when he went to visit him in prison.
Ali Aca,
that's yeah. Right. So these things are a pointer towards authenticity. Now, the whole point was that the text tells us that Zacchaeus was trying to see who Jesus was. And this is a very important theme in the New Testament. All it takes to, be enrolled in the list of those to whom salvation has come is to desire to see who Jesus is. And this, again, comes up in a parallel gospel, in the Gospel of St. John. Whom are you seeking? Whom do you seek? And, in the beginning of the Gospel, they say, Rabbi, let us see where you stay. And he said, come. And they remained with him for the rest of the day. So that's a very important topic. In our text, we also have enthusiasm with which Zacchaeus wanted to see Jesus. He ran ahead and climbed the sycamore tree to see him. Now, this is also a point which Luke underlines, because he wanted to tell us that despite the fact that Zacchaeus was so rich, despite the fact that Zacchaeus was, in the eyes of the Romans, a somebody, in the eyes of the Jews, he was a nobody. They didn't even allow him to pass through. He was hated, as you correctly point out. And to the point that in this crowd, he's lost. He's nobody. He's short. His money doesn't give him authority to pass through the crowd. And he's got to climb up a tree to try and get a glimpse of Jesus. And the next point, which is underlined by Luke, I think, is that catching a glimpse of Jesus and having an initial dialogue with him is not sufficient. There has to be a deeper personal dialogue, and that's what happens when Zacchaeus goes to the home of Jesus. They must have talked at length. The implication is that Jesus would have even stayed overnight, because I must stay at your house. And the next thing we know is the result, that Zacchaeus makes amends, fourfold indeed, and we'll talk about that. And Jesus says, today salvation has come to this house, because he too is a son of Abraham. You mentioned the Son of Man. I think we had discussed this text, and perhaps by way of recollection we should say that Son of Man in the Gospels is a technical term which could mean three things. It could either be an idiom standing for I, and this is the meaning here, the Son of Man came to seek out and save the lost, meaning I came to seek out and save the lost, or it could be a reference to the book of Daniel, where there is the enigmatic messianic figure whom Jesus equates himself with, and therefore he's saying, I'm the promised one. And there's obviously an overlap of meanings. And to seek out and save the lost has got a historical echo with a chapter in the prophet Ezekiel, chapter 34, where God himself and a future Davidic Messiah seek the lost sheep of Israel. And Jesus is saying that he is the one, he is the promised Messiah who sought out, who went to seek the lost sheep. I don't know if this makes sense to you or not.
Again, on reflection as we're talking, I realize that there's a bit of a demand on the reader who is asked to fill in a big gap. And again, we don't have the conversation, but the conversation can be imagined. It must have been quite a long conversation, after which you have this feeling of a kind of retribution, atonement. That's fine. There is, of course, we know already, there is that willing predisposition, and therefore, if you already are reaching out to Christ, Christ will come to you. But he has to reach out. He just didn't go counting his money in some back room.
Exactly.
He was on it, looking out for him. And we get this glimpse. But what I find is a bit strange in all this is that this anecdote, Zacchaeus anecdote, is recounted or told by Luke. It's not told by Matthew, as far as I know.
No, nobody else.
And Matthew would have been the person most likely when I looked at the passage we were going to discuss, and I immediately assumed that it was going to be by Matthew, because as a tax collector himself, he would have gone through the same process.
This is actually you're hitting the nail literally on the head here, because exegetes who specialize in Luke tell us that the language of this anecdote has got, linguistically, certain sections in it. We can't go into the nitty-gritty of that now. Certain sections, the way the Greek is relayed, which betray that the text was not completely redacted by Luke, but in other words, it was a text which he received from another tradition, and then he molded in his own. In other words, there is a betrayal there, that there is a text written by somebody else. Now, who knows, it could have been part of the synoptic tradition, which never found its way into our texts. But I would plead, in the light of what you pointed out, and in the light of what the experts on Luke tell us, that yes, there must have been a pre-Lucan text relaying the story, and who better than Matthew, as you correctly point out, which appealed to Luke, because Luke has got the theme of poor and rich, sinner and saved, and so on. And Luke inserted it into his gospel, but he received the story, even textually he received the story, and then he edited it. And this is proven by the contrast between the way the Greek idioms are used in the text. So I would say, if we were to, let's say, dare make a hypothesis, that I would subscribe to your idea that Luke must have got this from some synoptic tradition, a text which was circulating in the early community, which, funnily enough, never found itself in the synoptic gospels, but he picked on it. And I would agree with you. Who better than Matthew? He knew these things inside out.
Exactly, and it would have been an anecdote which would have immensely appealed to him.
Very much so.
Because here is somebody like him.
Like him.
Who has come indirectly to the road of salvation, or rather, salvation has come to him.
Exactly.
And this is what Christ tells him at the end, isn't it? Salvation has come to his house.
Exactly. And you're mentioning the end of the story. I would like to give a brief of a historical background here on this, the way Zacchaeus accepted salvation. In fact, he did more than one would have been asked for in Jewish law. Because he says, he says to Jesus, half of my possessions, Lord, I will give to the poor. And if I have defrauded anyone of anything, I will pay back four times as much. Now, this is very interesting because according to Jewish law, as found in the book of Leviticus, Jews were expected to compensate if they've stolen anything by giving back what they stole and adding one-fifth. And Zacchaeus adds fourfold. The only time where in the Jewish background there is the mention of a fourfold retribution is when it's a question of stealing sheep or goats or animals. But this is not our case, which means Zacchaeus is not only has not only repented of what he's done, but he's gone beyond what he was asked to do by Jewish prescription. It was only Roman law which, in certain circumstances, appealed to a fourfold retribution. when somebody made a false accusation in court and so on in the first century AD. But this is not the point here. Zacchaeus was a Jew, and according to Jewish law, he did more when he repented than was actually legally asked of him. Which brings us to another important point in the story. This is an encounter of love. And here we've got paradoxes going on. We've got the crowd is grumbling. And in the previous chapters of St. Luke, it is the Pharisees who grumble that Jesus was eating with publicans, sinners and tax collectors. Here, everybody is grumbling, and that presumably includes the disciples themselves. And Jesus wants to teach them a story, a lesson. Even he is a son of Abraham. In other words, what we have here is, if I may formulate it this way, Jesus took a risk because, according to the mentality of the time, if he accepts, and here in fact he invites himself to share a meal with a public sinner, if he is a guest of a public sinner, then that meant, in the mentality of the time at least, that he is an accomplice.
Yeah.
He is endorsing. Whereas Jesus turns the table around, he says, no, 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 love will really change everything.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't know whether this makes
to
sense to you.
Hospitality exactly. From somebody, usually accept hospitality from somebody who is hospitable, who is kindly disposed towards you,
exactly.
And a friend. In this case, I can understand the crowd's grumbling. But as we said, normally it's the Pharisees, because the Pharisees were always there, always watching to catch him out on something.
Exactly.
And you know, why does he consort with sinners like this one? Yes, and I think it brings out Christ's sense of compassion and love, and that is the overriding factor.
And his teaching this time is done, let's say, in a practical manner, because often we find in the gospel narratives, as you recall, that Jesus teaches something, let's say as a rabbi, and then they completely are dumbfounded, and he says for the umpteenth time, have you not yet understood?
Yes.
And this is one of those cases where he tries to make the point in a practical way, and still they did not understand. One other point which perhaps deserves note is the play on words on the word Lord. We have here Zacchaeus addressing Jesus as Lord. He says, Zacchaeus stood there and said to the Lord, look, half my possessions, Lord, I will give. Now, Lord has got a double meaning. It could mean, as we say in Maltese, Signor, in the sense of Sir. Or it could mean Lord in the sense of the Lord, you know. And Luke is obviously editing the story after the event of the resurrection. And therefore, he is emphasizing that no matter what Zacchaeus had in mind, de facto, he was meeting the Lord par excellence. And what we have perhaps, again, is not spelled out in the text is, would Zacchaeus have intuitioned, would have intuited, rather, that he is talking to the Lord? I assume that some inkling he had, because otherwise he wouldn't be seeking out who Jesus was. In other words, it's not only Signor, you know, even nowadays Maltese, who tries to be subservient, he says, Signor, Malem, idly. You know, the point is here, Lord. And I think Zacchaeus, apart from using a polite form of Lord, was already having an intuition that here he's meeting somebody who can change his life.
I don't know if we can touch on this, but what would the original have been for Lord?
Kurie, in Greek.
In Greek.
Yes.
And that has the same significance?
Yes, either as
let's say, Signore.
Signore, Mr.
La casa del Signore.
But in the New Testament, especially in the post-resurrection narratives, it means Lord in the sense of, practically, God.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
The Lord in this, with a capital L. So that's why some English versions translate this passage as Sir, sir, mister. Others, like the one I have in front of me, more aptly translated as Lord, indeed, with a capital L.
Yeah.
And I think this is an encounter between the Lord and a sinner. And it teaches us, I think, that the passage shows that Jesus comes, is equated with the coming of the kingdom, is equated with salvation, which is given today. I don't know whether you would subscribe to this.
It is one instance of many.
Yes.
When there has been a kind of conversion.
That's it.
This is Zacchaeus' conversion, and the word really meant turning.
Exactly.
A turning point.
A turning point.
Then we've got Mary Magdalene and many others, of course.
A turning point, a turning back, and also a change of mentality.
Yes, yes.
And he changes his mentality.
Yeah.
Because he does more than the law prescribes.
Yes.
And I think the key word in the passage is today.
Yes.
It's not tomorrow or yesterday. Hikatnunk. No. It's
this
here and
day.
Now. This day.
This day.
This is the moment. That's
what today really means.
Carpe diem.
Yes.
This is Jesus telling him. Exactly.
Yes.
That was Professor Anthony Frindall and Professor Peter Barsalo discussing the gospel passage chosen for today's commentary.